Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Hello, hello, women of strength. You guys, I am so excited for today's episode. We have our friend Caitlin from Tech. Are you from Texas? Where are you from?
I'm from Texas. Yes.
Texas. BFW. Okay. I was like, I wanted to say that. And then I started questioning myself. So she is from Texas. And we just kind of went over a quick rough draft of all of the things that happened in her birth. And there are so many points, I feel like, to her birth. So one, she's a VBAC. She had preeclampsia with her first and her second, the second baby. Mm-hmm. During her VBAC, and she, with her first, signed an AMA. So we're going to talk about that and what that looks like. We're going to talk more about preeclampsia. We're going to talk about switching providers. One, switching providers, but two, maybe not even trying to set ourselves up to have to switch in the future and set ourselves up for a supportive provider from the beginning, because she definitely had that. And so much more. So I'm really, really excited to get into the story. I do have a review of the week. And this review is, I don't actually know how to say the name, Sidzi maybe, or maybe it was Sydney, but Sidzi says, such an amazing resource for VBAC hopeful mamas and others preparing for birth who haven't had a previous cesarean. Their podcast has amazing birth stories and their blog has amazing articles. They have a ton of resources to find doulas and providers, and excited and happy to help support VBAC mamas. I recommend their podcast to my doula clients, and I listen to each episode as it comes out. Definitely check it out. Okay, I love that. So this is a birth worker. Birth workers, we love you, and we love your reviews. And as you know, we do have a review or a doula directory. So if you're looking for a doula, these doulas are absolutely incredible. Go to thevbacklink.com and search or click on find a doula, search your area and find out what doulas are next to you. Also, if you haven't had a chance, I'm requesting a specific place for reviews today. If you would not mind, head over to Google the VBAC link and then go click on and leave a review. I would absolutely love it. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2C section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Caitlin, I'm already so excited that I'm going to turn the time over to you, but before I do,
I'm excited too.
I have to say one thing.
Do
happy
it.
Happy birthday. It's not
Thank
your birthday
you.
Today, the day you're recording, but we determined that this is the day your episode's coming out, which did not even happen on purpose.
No.
And happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
You're
I appreciate
welcome.
It.
You are welcome. All right. Well, go ahead and share your stories.
Okay. Well, I guess we start with my first birth, which was August 18th, 2021. I was 34 weeks pregnant, had lingering high blood pressure for about a week, and it was elevating over time. And my doctor was like, let's take a look at the baby. And with that check, baby was showing signs of distress, and it was pretty immediate and quick. We went in for an emergency C-section. In the moment, I was so scared as my first child, and I didn't know what that meant. I didn't really care what that meant for my future births. I didn't really think of what that would mean for my future birthing experience. My main concern was my current baby isn't doing well, and let's do what we need to do to keep him and myself safe. So that's kind of how that went. I do want to say that my C-section was not traumatic. I didn't have a terrible recovery. It really was all good. I just knew moving forward for future births that I wanted to experience labor. I mean, I'd never experienced labor. I wanted to have more children than just two. And so I knew moving forward from that, the risks that come with it. And so that's kind of how my first kiddo was born, emergency C-section. And he was healthy. He was in the NICU for a little bit, but that's just because he was so little at 34 weeks. So
Yeah. So
that was
you
my.
actually had a preterm. That was another thing I forgot I wrote down. You had a preterm cesarean.
I did. Yes. And it was very quick. We were at my doctor's appointment at 10 and got to the hospital, and baby was born like within an hour or two. Like it
Wow.
was a quick turnaround. So
Wow.
it was very high stress situation, but all worked out okay. And now my almost 3-year-old is wonderful. So I'm grateful for how that all worked out. And I'm just glad that he was safe and I was safe. So that's my first birth. For my second, I knew I wanted to try for a VBAC, and I did extensive research. And when I say extensive research, I mean like I went crazy a little bit. No, there's never too much research. I did like attain all the information I could find. I listened to this podcast 24/7. I looked at like studies and articles and like the actual science behind it all. And I kind of just dove headfirst into it. And I knew that this is what I wanted to try for. I wasn't scared of a repeat cesarean again. Like I wasn't like, I can't do that again. I just knew this was the route I wanted to try to take. My due date for my second was August 19th, 2023. So literally 2 years and a day after my first was born. I told my doctor at every single appointment, I was like, even as early as it gets, the appointment where you hear the heartbeat, where the appointment before they could even find the heartbeat, I was like, I want a VBAC. I want a VBAC. I want a VBAC. And he was extremely receptive, consistently said, you're a perfect candidate, super receptive. And so I felt really good about it. I was thinking about this last night with my husband when I was like running through the little details. And I think that my provider being so on board made me feel like I didn't even need to do like the little additional prodding questions, you know, to make sure that it was going to work out, because it just seems like every time I brought it up, it was a no-brainer that it was all going to be back fine. And so that's kind of just like a little caveat for later, but I felt like it was all going to be great. My provider was on board, and that's like number one checklist. But the things that I didn't do was I didn't ask him specifics. So I didn't ask him like if I need an induction, what does that look like? I didn't ask him how many successful VBACs have you done? What is your approach if X, Y, and Z happens? I didn't get details because it
Yeah.
just seemed so positive the whole time.
And that's the hard thing. It can be so easy to be like, hey, I want to be back. Do you support that? Yeah, cool. No problem. Yeah, of course we do. No worries.
Right.
Or like you said, where he was kind of like, yes, I know you want to be back. Let's move on. Instead of talking about that VBAC, like I feel like that was maybe a little bit of a flag
Yes,
in
yes. That
ways.
I should have picked up on, because it got like you were saying, that it got to the point where I would walk into an appointment and the first words he was like, "I know you want to be back. We've got that." And I'm like, "Okay, great. Like we've got it." And I think I was a little naive to the fact that like that was him kind of checking that off the appointment list maybe, and being like, I don't actually need to give this girl a VBAC when push comes to shove, or give her a shot
I
at
can
one.
tell or anything. Yeah. And I really encourage people to ask open-ended questions. Like you said, like how many VBACs do you support and how do you feel about VBAC and what does it look like? And if for some reason I have to be induced, do you induce them and what does it look like then? You know, all of those
Yes.
types of things. So
Definitely, definitely. And so I started to feel this pressure then, because towards the end, we didn't really talk about a plan. And then the language changed a little bit to like, we can't really make a plan because we just have to wait and see if you're going to go into labor. And so then I was like, oh, dang, then I really need to go into labor. And then we got to like 36, 37 weeks, and I'm getting more and more in my head. What if I don't go into labor? What happens next? We still don't have a plan. And so we started to do membrane sweeps. I got 3 membrane sweeps, and I did them on like the time period. I don't remember what it was. I think if you do 2 within 48 hours or something like that, like people say, I don't know who people are. I was just a maniac with my research. And they're like, maybe that'll increase your body into like going into it on its own. And so I did 3 membrane sweeps, trying to
Wow.
get the ball rolling, stayed at 1 the whole time, no changes. I was doing all of the things at home up to week 39. I was eating dates, curb walking, drinking raspberry leaf tea, bouncing on the ball. I was pumping colostrum. My baby is 9 months old and I still have colostrum in her freezer. Like
Holy cow, girl.
I was doing everything, just trying, like begging my body, like, please do this for me, please. And there was no
It
changes. There was
wasn't
like,
listening. It wasn't ready.
no, it wasn't. And I also was forgetting to consider the fact that my body with my first did not go into labor. So this was my first real experience with childbirth and labor. You know what I mean? And my C-section grew and changed me in so many beautiful ways. And like I said earlier, I don't regret that at all. And, but I, in my head, I kind of counted that as like, my body should be going into labor, when in reality, my body wasn't going to go into labor, at least not as early as I was trying to make it. So moving on from that, did all the things, kept doing the things. I felt frustrated doing the things because the things weren't singing and I couldn't, but I tried and all I kept doing was being positive. And my blood pressure was fine my entire pregnancy. So we got past that 34 week mark, which with my first, my high blood pressure started at week 33 and got past that point and felt really good about it. No high readings. And then on August 4th, I was 38 weeks. It was a Friday. And I had felt kind of off during the day, but I was also like, I'm 38 weeks pregnant. I'm probably going to feel off for the next however many weeks I'm pregnant. And then later at night, I noticed like major swelling in my hands and my feet. And I was like, I've done this. This is something I am familiar with. I'm not familiar with some things that are coming, but this is something I am. And so my husband had me go to like a, we didn't have a blood pressure cuff. So he had me go to like a CVS or Walgreens, something like that, and get it, take it in one of those machines. And it was extremely high. And so I was apprehensive. I was like, I don't want to rush right in. So I called my on-call person, and obviously their response was to go to the hospital. I mean, they can't guide you through anything when it comes to high blood pressure over the phone. So go to the hospital, planning on going there for my VBAC, even though I'm 39 weeks now and still at a 1, but I was like, it's going to be fine. My doctor's on board. But the bummer of that was that it was a Friday night. And at this point, it's probably closer to middle of the night, early Saturday morning. And so the nurse who had us at intake was actually, we recognized her and then couldn't figure out. And then she was like, when did you have your last baby? It was the same nurse who helped us prep for my emergency delivery of my first son. So she was super sweet, super like comforting. It was nice to have somebody who had seen kind of what we went through previously. My blood pressure was still high at the hospital. They started some IV fluids and I was kind of just resting. They checked on baby and he looked great. No issues with him, which from my prior experience, that's what changed everything for me, was that the baby was, oh, that he was fine. And so I kept asking, like throughout our time, kind of sitting, watching my blood pressure, waiting, I was like, baby's fine. And they would like check out and they were like, he's doing great. So that was super, super, and that was completely different from my first time around. Then finally, the doctor comes in who was working the floor that night. And first words out of her mouth were, we'll do a C-section first thing in the morning. We'll get you on the calendar. And I was like, oh, well, my plans were to try for a VBAC. And that was basically met with like an eye roll. And she was like, you can talk to the doctor that's in for your doctor this weekend because he's not the doctor over the weekend. You could talk to her. and see what she thinks. And I was like, no, yeah, like I'll happily talk to her. Do you want to like call her right now? Because I'm not going to stay here. Don't put me on the schedule for tomorrow morning. And she actually did. She called the doctor that was in for the weekend from my doctor's practice or whatever. And I mean, basically what I kept getting was protocol is that when you have high blood pressure this late in pregnancy, we just do a C-section. And then every time I asked, like, why? I was like, if my baby's fine, why do we do a C-section? If my baby's doing okay and my blood pressure at that point was getting lower, we were managing it. I think the fluids helped, elevating my legs and resting, all of those things. My blood pressure was lowering and my baby was fine. And I was like, why? And they didn't really have an answer every time I asked that. So I get on the phone with the doctor that was in for my doctor over the weekend, the one who would be doing the C-section the following morning. And I'm telling you, we were on the phone for, I had her on speakerphone so my husband can hear what she was saying and what I was saying. And my husband knew I did all this research, but I think he was kind of like, as I was debating with this doctor, I could see on his face, he was learning things and he was like, oh, that's a good point. Oh, really? Oh, okay. You're not that crazy, Caitlin. Like I see it, you know? And so I could see him kind of learning through what I was saying to her, like about what my why and why I wanted to do it this way. She was basically saying, like, I could have a baby in your arms by lunch tomorrow. You could be walking around. And I was like, that's really not my goal. That's not what I'm trying to do. And it finally, I was like, hey, look, like I, based on what I've found, I know that the a good induction method would be a balloon Foley. So can you come do that? And I was like, I'm not going to say yes to a C-section tomorrow with my baby doing fine and my blood pressure dropping, like you're getting better. And she was like, okay. She was like, I can do it. And I was like, have you done it before? And she was like, yes, I have. And she was like, okay, I'll come in and do one tonight. We could see how you progress overnight and so on and so forth. They put us in our room and my blood pressure is looking good. They take like monitors off of me. They don't need to be watching baby anymore. All is good. We're sitting in the room. We're waiting for the doctor to come to start the balloon. And finally, I asked the nurse, I'm like, hey, is the doctor coming? She said she wanted to give me time to progress overnight so we could see how I'm doing in the morning. I'm aware of the fact that like this could take a long time. And I told the doctor that I was like, I'm very patient. I'm not trying to, you know, rush this. So she's like, I'll go check on the doctor, see where she's at. Comes back in the room and she's like, the doctor was like asleep at home. She was like, the doctor said she's gonna come do the balloon Foley first thing in the morning. And I was like, that's not what we talked about on the phone. She told me, I said, the doctor told me that she was going to come do it tonight so we could progress overnight, all of that stuff. And me and my husband are sitting in this room and I'm like, our kid is at home, our other child, and they're not even checking me anymore. Like they're not monitoring anything. My blood pressure is good. The baby's healthy. And I'm like, why is there no urgency? You know, like if this was something that needed to be done, like, why are we not doing anything? I guess was my concern. And so as I'm verbally processing this with my husband, the nurse was extremely professional, but I felt like a vibe. And I asked my husband, I was like, did you feel the same thing where it was like she was affirming what we were discussing verbally just between him and I, but like I felt like she was like, yes, like you're not wrong. And so the second I said to my husband, like, I think we should leave. Like, I feel like this isn't right. The nurse was like, I could get you those papers whenever you want them. And so she went and I was like, I think I want them. I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm a rule follower. I don't want to risk anything. My husband's like, Caitlin, I don't know. I don't know if this is like safe or whatever. But I just felt like if there was no urgency to get things moving now, then what's the urgency in waiting until Monday when I could talk to my provider who had encouraged me and said that the VBAC was possible the whole time? So we left against medical advice, very intimidating for somebody who was a total rule follower. We felt like we were going to be like dogs with our tails tucked between our legs, walking out of the hospital, bags on shoulders. And the nurses, like, I was like, oh my gosh, those nurses are going to watch us and think like, oh, they're causing harm to their baby or whatever. But as we were walking out, it was the coolest thing ever. All of the nurses were like, I think they could tell I was like insecure a little bit about my decision or just not sure. And they were like giving me thumbs up and like silent, like, you've got this, like clapping, you know? And I was like, oh my gosh, okay. So this wasn't like a dumb call. And one nurse stood up and said to me, like, thank you so much for, as we're about to leave the door, she's like, thank you so much for advocating for your own health and standing firm in the decisions that you want to make for your birth. And it was just, it was so affirming for me.
I seriously have chills and goosebumps right now, just you saying that and her saying that to you and you being able to leave feeling that, especially when you felt like it was right, but then the way that the world makes us feel about going against medical advice, you had that, oh, I don't know if I should be doing this feeling as you're walking out. And to have that advocacy as you're walking out, I'm sure puts so much power in your pocket.
Totally, totally, totally. Yeah, that nurse, it was life-changing for me. And I just felt okay going into the next day, you know, waiting to go see my doctor, whom I thought was gonna be like on my team with all of this stuff that I had been sticking up for.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
Get to my doctor on Monday. I rested for the weekend. Nothing crazy, just kind of relaxed. I got a blood pressure cuff to monitor. It never really got, I mean, it wasn't good. It was elevated, but it never got to that zone where it was on Friday night when I went in. Went to my doctor on Monday. Blood pressure was elevated, but not scary high. He said, let's have you just lay low. Let's check you again on Thursday morning. I went in Thursday morning and it had gotten up higher again. And so he's like, I'm not comfortable playing this game with your past and how your baby was first time around. He was like, let's not do that. Like, let's not push it to that point again and see. I agreed with him in that. I was like, yeah, no, like we're now playing Russian roulette of it's high, it's not as high, it's high, it's not as high. So I was like, okay, great. What are we going to do to get the VBAC going? Like, how do you usually approach this? And he completely froze. He was like, wait, no, like, I think we're going to do a C-section. And I was like, what? I was shocked and so confused and still only at 1 centimeter. I was like, what are we talking about here? This is not what I said to you at every appointment. This is not. And my husband knew, he saw all over my face. I was like, where is this coming from? And my doctor said, I'll let you guys talk about it. He left the room for a minute. And my husband was like, when he leaves, my husband's like, Caitlin, we have to kind of like trust our doctor. And I was like, I do trust the doctor, but I trust what I know more. Mm-hmm. And Sam was like, you're not a doctor. I was like, no, I know. But like, I've heard, and that's where these stories come into play. All the stories that I heard of people who have been successful with this, that's where that all comes into play. And that's why I'm so passionate about sharing this, because that's what made me be like, no, but I know it can work. And I've heard of it working. And so I went on, I think my doctor came in and he thought that he was going to come into a room and us be like, okay, yeah, we have to do what we have to do. And no, I was like, I would like to give myself all chances for a vaginal birth before Now, again, I've said this before, I am not scared of another C-section. I had a great experience. I recovered really well, but I want to give myself a shot at this. A question I should have asked way previous was about the balloon Foley thing. But here I am. He was so positive the whole time that I just assumed surely if push comes to shove, we knew what we were going to need to do. And he told me he's only ever done one and he doesn't really know or feel comfortable doing another. And he said, I might not be dilated to get one in. And so
Okay.
I was like, okay, well, typically that's how you approach inducing a VBAC. And I was like, okay. I told my husband, I was like, I don't know what either of you want me to say. Like, I would like to do a balloon Foley. And my doctor was like, I don't feel comfortable. And
Did he say why? Like, what about it didn't make him feel comfortable?
he said he's only ever really done one.
Oh, that's a why.
Well, and I was like, I'll be your second. I don't, and I, and then it was more so the approach of, I don't think one would fit. And that might be true. I don't really even, I was at a one, so I don't know. But I was
Usually, if
like,
you're at a one, you have to be. I mean, even people without an open cervix, even like a half a centimeter, they can get it in. It's usually a little less pleasant, but typically a Foley will go in. Sometimes the cervix is still posterior, which is also a sign that our baby's not ready to come. But if so, it can go out and around. But one in his whole career, he's only placed one.
yeah,
That seems
that's what he
kind of
told me.
crazy to me.
That's what he told me. That's what he told me. So I'm like, okay, here's what I need you to do. Phone a friend, or I will. I was like, the power of Google, I started to Google local doctors in the area who were VBAC friendly, who were at the same hospital I had already been registered at, and all those things. And he looked at me like I was absolutely insane. My husband did a little bit too, but I was like, no, like find somebody then. Like if you won't do it, find somebody who will. And it was very awkward because when he did find a doctor who would do it for me, that was great. I was in like the room, whatever, and he wasn't at the hospital when I got the balloon Foley. But the doctor that would, before I left my actual doctor's office, all those nurses were like very not on board with the call I was making. And so that's an awkward feeling, you know, like to be like, okay, everybody in this room thinks that I'm doing something wrong. And it felt really good to leave. It felt good to go get to the hospital, a new set of nurses, different doctor doing it. And all went well. She placed it just fine. I'm so grateful that she was willing to just hop in for a patient that wasn't even her own. We got to the hospital around 12:15. And I had a male nurse. He was awesome. And I was at a 1.5 when I got there. So more than a one. The doctor who did the Foley for me was great. When she got it in, she said she might have broken my water. She wasn't sure. She couldn't really tell because it was pretty tight. It wasn't comfortable, but I wouldn't describe it as like painful. They started low dose Pitocin and we hung out basically. I waited on that Foley to do its job. And yeah, so from noon until like 6 o'clock p.m., I was dilating, things were happening. And I think I got the epidural and it fell out right around the same time. I want to say I got the epidural right before it fell out. My contractions were picking up and coming really fast, which was interesting because I just didn't expect it to happen that quickly because everybody told me, the doctor on the phone, everybody told me it's going to take forever, forever. You're not going to dilate. It's going to take forever. And it really wasn't taking forever because I had been there from noon to six and things were happening. So the nurse I had, he was wonderful, wonderful, super helpful, super team VBAC. You've got this. And when it came time for his shift change, I was like so bummed. He was like, I'll get a good one for you. I'll get a good one for you. And when the nurse that came into the room, she was so excited it was me. It was the nurse that stood up and told me thank you for advocating for yourself and like your, how you want to bring your baby into the world. And she was just amazing. And she was so excited. It was me and I was so excited it was her. And it was just, that was just like a huge full circle moment, because she was like, you're doing it, you got it. And I was like, girl, yeah, you have no idea. Yeah. So once the balloon fell out, we spent the night repositioning just to keep things moving along. At midnight, the doctor came in to see if my, to check and see like, okay, did your water break when I put the balloon in or did it not? And it turns out it was already, my water already broken, but she also said there's like pooling, like a lot of blood. I was losing a lot of blood. And she was very confused by that. So she did like a rush ultrasound in fear of placental abruption. And she did prepare us that if that was the case, I would be going back for like an immediate C-section. And my husband like thinks it's funny. He made a joke. He's like, well, that would have made all this worth all the time. Like, I was like, it's not time for that, but whatever. So that would have been a bummer if that was the case. And, but there was a lot of bleeding. And so I knew that if it was a placental abruption that we would go back for a C-section and all would be fine. And every, and that's my biggest thing that like, I want to say is that it would have been okay. It wouldn't have been like earth shattering to me, you know? So, but placenta looked good. And I was like, praise be, let's keep trucking along. She said she's going to monitor the bleeding. She wasn't sure where it was coming from. We'll just wait on my body to do its thing. And I'm just so grateful that this random doctor, I'd never met her, I'd never met this woman, made me feel like I was the one making the decisions about my body and my baby, because that isn't how I had felt by the other three doctors that I had talked to in the process of this, of up to that point.
Yeah, which is sad. Three out of four providers made you feel like that versus uplifting, being part of your birth, making choices for yourself and your baby.
Totally, totally. And I felt like maybe everybody who was looking at me looked like, thought I was like maybe a pushover or like just didn't know what I was talking about. And so when I kind of pushed back on things, people kind of backed off and were like, oh gosh, we don't want to deal with that girl, you know? And nobody wants to be that girl, but everything continued to go great. Lots of new positions and dilating was happening fairly quickly. I got to 9. In the morning, that same male nurse requested me again. So I loved my nurses, like changed my life. They were amazing. And the nurses were like my cheer squad. They were amazing. They made me feel like things were going great.
They were doulas. They're acting as doulas in here. They're like, even by like requesting you, which is awesome and very rare. Very rare.
Yes, they were phenomenal. And like every time one of the familiar ones came in, I was like, we're good. I'm good. I trust you with my life. Like they were amazing. And that was encouraging for me because having a doula wasn't really in our budget, unfortunately. But I did need somebody else because my husband's there like, yeah, Kate, like whatever you feel passionate about you needing to do. And he was totally on board. But it was nice to have somebody with like a medical background saying like, no, you are doing the right thing. Here's how we can progress you forward. Here's what we should do next, you know, because I never had a vaginal birth. So he came back, he requested me, he was my nurse again. And then at like, I think it was 10 a.m., my contractions, they became so intense and so on top of each other. And I think it was worse that this happened after I wish I either never got the epidural and built up to that, or like the taste of having the pain relief and then it going away was not fun at all. It would have been better to just never have had the pain relief at that point. So I was at 9 and they called the anesthesiologist and he did like a flush of medication to try to offer some more relief. That didn't change anything. And so 2 hours later, they came back and he checked and he was like, oh, your epidural became dislodged, I guess. So I wasn't getting any of that medication that I was getting previously. So unfortunately at 9 centimeters, you're in full blown labor, and they didn't realize for 2 hours that's what the problem was. And finally, it took my husband saying to somebody, like, I don't think she's just feeling intense feelings. Like, I think that she's feeling the actual contraction, which also was discouraging for me because this delay, that 2 hour span of no changes was the longest span I had gone with no progression in the entire experience. And so I was getting nervous about that. I was like, not only am I like in immense excruciating pain, but I'm like, but why is it not going? Why am I not dialing to a 10? Why am I not a 10? What's going on here? And so the anesthesiologist said to me, like, hey, you're at a 9. You can wait it out. And just when you get time to push, just push. Like, you don't need the epidural to be working. And I was like, I could do that. But I also got an epidural
for the pain relief. And I was like, I kind of want the relief. And I also kind of want to be able to relax and see if that helps me get to a 10. And so they did place a second epidural. And I mean, it helped. It took a while. It's the whole process basically restarting. My doctor told me, hey, since you were just up for 2 hours with like contractions on top of each other, how about you try to rest? I'll come check on how you guys are doing in a little bit. Popped in about 30 minutes later and he asked if he could check me. And I was like, yes. And he lifted up the covers and my baby's hair was there in 30 minutes.
What? Like, you were like crowning?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So I went from 2 hours at a 9. They gave me the second epidural. And then within 30 minutes, they went to go check and they didn't have to check anything because the baby was there. And so it's funny because we had just reset the room to be like dark, comfortable, rest. And it's like, nope, open the blinds, like get ready to go. Like, so that was a crazy turnaround. And it was my husband and I didn't even believe him when he said it. We were like, pair already? Like, we just sat here for 2 hours at a 9.
Yeah.
Like, I never even got measured at it. Do they measure it at 10?
I mean, they can go in and be like, oh, you're complete. You know?
Yeah. Right, right. So yeah. It went very fast. I was shocked by that. Pushed for 15 minutes and baby was born. It was like smooth sailing from then on out. It was 24 hours total, which everybody's biggest threat to me was, it's going to take forever. You're going to be there forever. You're going to be doing this forever. And it was 24 hours start to finish. Baby being born, baby being healthy, me getting the VBAC, me getting the golden hour. Because with my first, he was straight to the NICU. I didn't get to hold him or anything. And I really wanted that. It was super redemptive for me. And just super special that like my husband and I were in the same room after the baby was born, you know, because he went to the NICU with our first. So it just, having the VBAC made me so like proud and confident in myself and like any future births that I'm blessed with. I'm like, now I know, like, I'm an advocate and other moms can put their foot down for themselves. Like, you have control of what happens to you as you bring a baby into this world. And I don't think I knew that, like, before being in the thick of it, that I actually did get to make the calls, you know?
Yes.
And yeah, all these medical things that came up, like the high blood pressure, how easy I could have been like, okay, yeah, whatever you say. But that just because of things that come up in pregnancy doesn't mean you need to get straight to a surgery room.
I mean, look at that. Yeah, your blood pressure did go back up into that high range. And you didn't just go in and have a C-section. You had a slowly induced VBAC. So did your provider ever, your original male provider ever come back to the scene? Like, did that provider catch baby?
He is the one who, when I was stuck at the 9, he was in at that time.
Okay.
So he was there from being at 9 centimeters, and he's the one who delivered my son. The other doctor came in to check on us after, which was super sweet. She was incredible. But yes, he did come back for all of that. And there was a sense of me being like, this all worked out.
Oh, look at that.
It all worked out. Would you look at that? So, and he would like it was interesting because he was very much like, I knew you were determined. And I was like, okay, yeah, I was, but like you were trying to make me not be. So I don't know. I do believe like he did incredible with my first birth and especially the first time mom with that scary of a situation happening. I just think that sometimes it's what's more comfortable. And also it makes me like not nervous, but like sad because if this was my first baby, I literally would have not ended up in the situation I was in. And I just wonder how many moms get put in these positions and then have to make, don't get to make a call because they don't know they can make a call because they don't know that they're the ones who get to make the choice.
And it kind of goes back to the review where it says, yeah, it's for V, but this podcast is for people who have had a previous cesarean, but also for people who haven't had a previous cesarean, who haven't had these experiences and who may not have that full education yet. I think that this podcast is so great for those people who want to learn what happens out there and what could
I
happen and
agree.
your options and how people advocate for themselves. And I'm so grateful for the nursing staff in
Oh
your
my gosh,
hospital
they
for
were
being so
amazing.
amazing.
When we got moved to the other room after the baby was born, the nurse who was there when I signed my AMAs and stuff, the one that she did all that with us, she came into the room. She was like clapping. She was like, you did it. Like everybody was so on our team, which was truly incredible. And that changed everything for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So did
And
your blood? Oh, go ahead.
another thing for just like new moms too, who haven't gone through it, like the recovery is different. And like C-section moms are absolute heroes. They're tough as nails. But I also, the doctors were telling me, you're so young and you'll bounce back so fast from a second C-section. And it's not that bad. Like you healed great the first time. And that's all true. But the recovery was different because I didn't have a major abdominal surgery.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories. Thank you for
Thank
advocating for
you.
yourself, for
Yes.
being an example to others on how to advocate for themselves. And we know with preeclampsia, it really can be an overnight serious thing,
Yes,
but
totally.
it doesn't always mean that you have to just go and have a C-section. And there's so many times where I see a birth where we have preeclampsia, really high blood pressures, the proteins, all the things. We go in for an induction and then it's managed. The blood pressure is managed throughout the entire rest of the pregnancy. So I don't know. There's that. Like, I just want to say there's that. Because a
There
lot of the
is.
time, providers say, oh, your blood pressure is so high, labor would be far too stressful. But there are so many ways to help manage the blood pressure. And we do know that sometimes there are reasons, medical emergency reasons, to go in and have a C-section, but it doesn't always mean you have to. We have a preeclampsia blog, so we're going to drop that in the show notes. So if you want to learn more about preeclampsia and the risk factors and how to prevent it, because sometimes there are ways that we can try to prevent them. Getting omega-3s, our calcium, our vitamin D, choline, getting a good adequate salt intake, getting really, really great rich foods, proteins, fruits, vegetables. Brewer's Diet, that's another thing I think is an amazing thing to check out. They have a whole preeclampsia section. So definitely check these things out. If you also have had preeclampsia before, like Caitlin, the risks of having it again are slightly higher. Just because if we've had it and things like that. So if you've had it before, definitely check this out before even getting pregnant. I think there's a lot of preparing to do before we get pregnant. And sometimes it happens no matter what efforts you've had. Maybe you've done all the things. Sometimes it just happens and it's out of our control. Like Caitlin was talking about to me about this before. Like she doesn't struggle with high blood pressure. It just happens during pregnancy.
And so my hope is like in future pregnancies that I wouldn't have a high blood pressure again. But if I do, I just feel more equipped and more confident too in how I would want to manage that. And obviously like where, yeah, I just it's hard because when you're being told things by medical providers that do know what they're saying in some regards to some extent, you want to continue to be like, I'm going to do what's safest for my baby. But my favorite question throughout my whole experience was, if my baby's okay, if my blood pressure is lowering, then why are we making the decisions that we're making? And that's kind of the pillar that my husband and I lived on in those disagreement conversations.
Yes. Well, and I want to point out before we go in, just kind of piggybacking off of that, it is okay to ask questions. You can say, okay, but why? Or what is the evidence on that? Or what are the medical reasons you are suggesting this or that? You can ask questions. Women of Strength, that is advocating for yourself, asking the question, so then you can make the final decision.
And if they don't have an answer, it's probably because there isn't an answer.
Right? Or there, if there's some gaslighting happening, that probably means there's also not an answer, but they're trying to create an answer and make you feel scared or like you would be stupid to make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh. I really wish all nurses were like the ones we had. We had awesome nurses.
They sound incredible. They were. Absolutely incredible. So shout out to them. Happy birthday again. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
We will talk to you later.
Thank you.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.